Hello and welcome to episode 221.
There we go. People have been posting the Tristan voice, "There it is," a lot online.
It's catching on.
It really seems like it, right? I feel like the "there it is like when you get to like the hottest take or whatever.
Yeah.
Or something. Like, how would you describe "there it is"?
When you distill something to its most accurate take is how I like to use it.
Okay. There it is. Yeah. You got to the point, right?
Yeah. Where you were headed towards the whole time. Like, it took a few tweets to get there, but you got there.
You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the FEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the FEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 221 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you, as usual, in separate locations. I'm in Boulevard Park, Washington, home of the Pelton Cast.
I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
See, the thing about welcome to episode 221 is it's just too many twos.
Oh.
That threw me off.
Too many twos. I think that was a Jay-Z song on Reasonable Doubt.
Too Many Twos, also the name of Daryl Morey's first album.
God.
Oh, we're off to a flying start.
Never gotten you started. Well, we don't want to hear Daryl Morey's first album today. We'll be talking more about the Blazers and the Bub in just a minute. I'm very excited to get to that one. But before then, we, as usual, have some toast to get to.
And we also have two beers this week because we could not coordinate to get the same beer. Very difficult. This has never been our strong suit. So I am drinking from our friends at Georgetown Brewing, the Johnny Utah Pale Ale.
Number one beer.
You know,
really not even close.
So we were talking about Manny's a while back, and I was remarking how much I love that Manny's, you know, because it makes all other pale ales taste bad. And then you pointed out to me that Johnny Utah is itself a pale ale, and I was like, oh, I guess the answer is Georgetown does that, but not just Manny's.
There you go.
What are you drinking this week?
I ended that argument quickly. I am drinking from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, the Wild Little Thing Slightly Sour Ale featuring guava, hibiscus, and strawberry.
That sounds terrible.
It's really, it says it's slightly sour, but it's pretty acidic, let's say. This one, it kind of gave me the, I puckered a little bit.
Love to get that bitter beer face. Love to do it. All right, well, we only have one toast this week, which is to, I guess she's not the former WNBA MVP, Breanna Stewart, who was named the Western Conference Player of the Week for her first week back in action after tearing her Achilles slightly longer than a week because the season opened on a Saturday, after averaging 18 points, 9.3 rebounds, and 3.2 assists. Or 3.3 assists during the Storm's 3-1 start. So here's to Stewie being back and as good as ever.
Huge. I don't think there was too much concern. I mean, you mentioned that you'd be feeling a lot better about Kevin Durant coming back after this, but Stewie looks normal.
She does. It's remarkable. Yeah, I mean, obviously Kevin Durant is much older, so it's a little different in his case. Stewie was exceptionally young for someone to suffer an Achilles rupture, but you know, usually that's a very difficult injury for players to come back from. Not a lot come back at 100%, and so far
Uncle
it looks like
Steve's basketball career has not been the same since
never
it happened on the court with us.
Never the same. Oh boy, we could have remembered that, and let's remember some years. I'm not sure what year it happened, but the I was standing behind him as he was dribbling away and suffered the injury, and he thought I had stepped on his foot, and I hadn't, and that's how you know it's an Achilles injury. I mean, that's not a joke. That's how you know.
Did we carry Steve to the car, or did we put him over his shoulder?
It's a good question, because you can't really walk. I don't know.
He was driving to the hoop with force.
And he obviously had, I'm sure he drove us, because I don't know if we were old. I mean, we were probably old enough to drive by that point.
We were like mid-20s. This was not that long ago.
It was not that long ago?
No. Old enough to drive. I know you didn't get your license until you were 27.
It was close. Some sad news as we record this on Tuesday night, as Pat O'Day's son has posted that his father, the legendary Seattle broadcaster, has passed away. Kind of weirdly fitting timing, coming right after what would have been Seafair weekend this past weekend, given that Pat O'Day was the voice of hydroplane racing for a long period of time, and undoubtedly the only person who ever got Jimi Hendrix to come on and broadcast an unlimited hydroplane race.
That didn't happen, did it?
No, it 100% happened.
Jimi Hendrix was on an unlimited hydroplane broadcast?
I'm almost certain about this, because he kind of like broke Jimi Hendrix. Like, he used to put on shows at the Midway that our mom has talked about attending. And
the Magic Castle, The Banished Castle, sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that is so shocking to hear when you think about Pat O'Day and his rise. I personally am most shocked that anybody was going to a rock concert in Midway, Washington, basically Des Moines. Across the street from, shouts to Brian Scalabrini, me, and Highline Community College.
Did you show yourself out there? Or are you just saying that you and Brian Scalabrini are two people who went there?
I shouted out myself.
Shout out to legendary Highline Community College alum me.
But definitely a fixture. I mean, we knew him a lot less as somebody who was involved in the music scene in Seattle. You know, by the time that we were paying any attention to music and culture, he'd sort of graduated out of that, but was definitely a fixture of hydroplanes our entire lives. And will also be known for the time that I met him at the Hard Rock Seattle grand opening, and was drunk enough at the Hard Rock Seattle grand opening to go up to him and introduce myself and say hi to Pat O'Day, and then spilled beer all over myself. And I think he looked down on me very judgingly.
I mean, it checks out with the Chick Channel thing. I guess I may have misrecalled the story. Apparently it was Jimi Hendrix who was with Pat O'Day and encouraged him to broadcast his first hydro race in 1967.
There we go.
But they were in Dallas at the time.
I feel like Jimi Hendrix was like, he didn't have that many years to be famous enough and be on a hydroplane broadcast and also just be in Seattle, Washington in early August.
I mean,
like,
I did also find a story about Jimi Hendrix's boyhood love affair with hydroplanes. So there you go.
Wow. Look at that.
Jimi Hendrix.
We're going to start playing that up big time.
I mean, he should be front and center on the Unlimited Hydroplane Racing website. That's all I'm
saying. Oh my god, Jimi Hendrix's childhood love affair with hydroplanes. One of the many things that you and I and Jimi Hendrix have in common.
Of course, absolutely. But and being fans of Pat O'Day, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay, we do have a fair amount to get to this week, so should we start by talking about Seattle food?
Absolutely, we should.
And what has become a recurring segment this week, we need to talk about cookies, and we need to talk about fried chicken.
Really has been the summer. You know, we had talked initially about this was going to be our search for Seattle's best fried chicken, and we're sort of, I feel like we're impromptu doing both cookies and chicken, which really just means we're eating a hell of a lot of cookies and chicken.
I mean, name a more iconic duo. Oh, wait. I mean, we're not searching for Seattle's best fried chicken because you've decreed that we're not allowed to eat June Baby until it's back open for in-person dining. So,
did I decree that?
You did decree that.
Oh, I decreed so many things. I can't even remember what I've most recently decreed. It just doesn't feel like I want to give June Baby a fair shake.
I mean, I would say that June Baby is probably the favorite in this.
Yeah.
And fried chicken is something, I mean, it transcends so many different styles of restaurant that I think in restaurant dining is probably going to eventually be a part of this. So
we'll see what happens.
If that ever comes back.
Look, wear a mask, people, if you ever want the Pelton cast to find Seattle's best chicken.
You know, if trying to help the Mariners and Seahawks win wasn't enough, do it for the Pelton cast. So this past week, we tried out a location that has been pubbed a couple of times in the Seattle Times, That's Cookies Country Chicken, which was initially operating as a pop-up out of, I believe it's Good Day Donuts in White Center, and now has found a more permanent location in the Tiki. Let me double check what the name of this is here. The Tiki Room, I think it is, in Georgetown.
Okay.
So it's been like it's been getting a lot of hype. A Sneaky Tiki in Georgetown is where it's located. Yes.
There we go.
It's been getting a lot of hype as like with people calling it Seattle's best fried chicken. So obviously we had to give it a try. And Katie Eats was in service, even though Kevin Eats has been shut down for the duration of the NBA seeding games.
Bullshit.
Katie Eats, it's random when the famous cousin Katie will show up with your food. Sometimes it's at 4:30 on Friday with no particular warning, but I'm not complaining.
No, I mean, you're getting the Cookies Country Chicken.
Okay, what were your thoughts about this?
I didn't really understand what was happening when people were talking about it. I'd previously never heard of it, and there was some chatter on the private chat where you were dispensing all of your hottest takes, of course. And I, even as the chicken was in my hands, I didn't really understand what it was, you know, like where this was coming from, what I should be expecting. And so you got a chicken sandwich. I got the chicken strips.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that.
I got chicken strips with fries and mac and cheese.
So this is more, I would say, Southern style fried chicken, which I guess is similar to Jack's Chicken Shack, but a little different stylistically. And the chicken sandwich is interesting because it appeared to be a chicken breast, not chicken thigh.
Okay, that's a positive.
Was it though?
Wow.
So
was it too much chicken?
No, I mean, I would never say that.
Okay.
What I would say is that, so the breading was better as compared to Jack's Chicken Shack. It didn't fall off at all, but it was kind of dry.
Really?
Which is the downside of chicken breast. It can be quite dry.
So I had mine, the strips. They were interesting. They were kind of like thicker pieces of chicken. I agree that I thought the breading was quite good. The problem was that Katie Eats, and not having any warning whatsoever that this food is coming, I was eating it 5 hours after it was picked up or something like that.
Wait, because it was you refrigerated it afterwards.
It really didn't hit me in any way. I just have to be totally honest. Maybe I need to have it fresh, but like I honestly thought it was worse than the Izell's down the street spicy. It really is not in competition whatsoever with like Maono or someplace like that, and it especially wouldn't be in competition with Heaven Sent Chicken Strips, Heaven Sent Spicy Strips. It's not even a question whether this is better than those. Like the Heaven Sent Spicy, this is so hard to say. The Heaven Sent Spicy Strips are singularly excellent.
Welcome to 221. I thought the strength of this, much like Jack's Chicken Shack, was the sides. The fries were quite good. They were kind of like, you know, the seasoning that's on like the curly fries that you get at, say, Jack in the Box, but non-curly fries.
I agree with that. And I thought that was pretty good too.
The mac and cheese was pretty strong.
I really felt like the mac and cheese was just average, to be honest.
Well, average mac and cheese is strong.
I mean, sure, I guess, but like it didn't really rate for me. Like if I were to go back again, I would probably try another side besides mac and cheese.
Interesting. They got a few different sides here. Red beans and rice certainly could be interesting. Sweet and spicy collard greens. So a few options there to try out. I would say it was not Seattle's best fried chicken, as you said.
So far, though, I mean, I'm willing to try it again.
Right.
And I think trying it again fresher might change things. So.
Okay, let's talk cookies.
There we go.
So this will connect with our search for Seattle's best teriyaki. This week we went to Teriyaki Madness on Capitol Hill, which is fairly near a little place called Hello Robin. So obviously. Also, I went to Rachel's Ginger Beer and picked up some ginger beer. I made it. Wow. Like it was the day before the seating game started. This was my most the day before the start of school behavior. Got the ice cream cookie sandwich from Hello Robin, the teriyaki, and the Rachel's Ginger Beer. And then a couple of cookies to go for the road.
Okay, I was going to say, did you get other cookies?
Obviously.
All right. What type of cookies did you go with for the sandwich?
I went with like this straight traditional chocolate chip for the sandwich, and then the birthday cake sprinkles, I think.
Okay. And that's what you got on the side was the birthday cake sprinkles?
No. Those were the two I got on the sandwich.
I see, yes.
The classic chocolate chip and the birthday cake. On the side, naturally, I got the Macklemore. And then also I tried, I don't know if I've had this, the whole wheat fancy chocolate with sea salt.
Interesting. Whole wheat fancy chocolate with sea salt. How was that?
So, you know, I had that after the fact. It was not as gooey as I like in my chocolate chip cookies or chocolate chunk cookies. Certainly not, you know, in comparison to what we've had lately with Bell's cookies. So that the whole wheat, I think, probably doesn't work quite as well with the sea salt as if it were the classic chocolate chip with sea salt.
Yeah.
I would recommend that. But the Macklemore remains awesome, and that was nice and gooey and delicious, and your hatred for this is a terrible taste.
I don't have a hatred for Macklemores, for the record. I just don't think you need the graham cracker. Like, the graham cracker adds nothing to the experience. It's basically like putting a good cookie on a weird platter. Like, I understand why you have it to make it a Macklemore. Look, just like you, Hello Robin loves puns. But I just don't think that the graham cracker adds anything to the equation. Whereas at Bell's in their s'mores cookie, the graham cracker was part of the cookie. It wasn't just like a sheet to put the cookie on. It was like you ate it and the graham cracker was also soft with the cookie. It was a completely different experience. So I also got a Macklemore. I got like a butterscotch chip cookie. I got a chocolate chip cookie. They had like a strawberry and raspberry with white chocolate chips seasonal, which is quite good. So had quite a few different options. And I would say they're obviously smaller than the Bell's cookies. They're cheaper too, so it kind of makes sense. The Hello Robin cookie is butterier. I don't know if you noticed that. Like, you could really taste the butter in their cookies.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would say that's my takeaway.
And I think it's a little bit harder with a smaller cookie to make it as soft and gooey as the middle as the ideal cookie is.
That's probably true. That makes sense to me.
So if I had to look at them head to head as competitors, which look, we all win because we're eating cookies here.
Exactly.
And the Hello Robin cookies, I think, are very good. But head to head as competitors, Bell's cookies are, I think they're better on the whole.
I tend to agree as well. Although they don't offer the ice cream sandwich, which is great.
You're going to have to make your own ice cream sandwich.
You can't always do that. That is always an option. So we're continuing our search for Seattle's best cookie this week, right?
Where are we going?
I thought you scheduled a pickup.
Oh, I did. Oh, fuck. That's tomorrow.
You forgot. Yeah, shit. You better go pick it up.
I scheduled a phone call, I think, right in the middle of that. Oh, boy. I think I'm picking that up at 3. I think my phone call is – I'm literally just like, wow, that's good that you reminded me.
Yeah. Well, the place that you scheduled this pickup is Hood Famous Bake Shop.
I should have put this in my calendar. Okay. 3 p.m. Okay. I'm fired up about this one. Wow. Thank you for reminding me. So we got – this is the Tristan Eats version because apparently Kevin Eats is closed for business right now.
Well, first off, Tristan Eats had a real misfire on Monday when I was supposed to get teriyaki and it turned out the kitchen was closed.
Yeah, that was a bummer. Look, it's not the most reliable service. I did keep your money, though. No, so we got 2 6-packs of ube cookies and then also a 4-pack of mini cheesecake. All ube! There we go.
Of course.
And, I'm excited to... I've had the ube cookies before, but it's been a while. And I'm excited to have them in context. Obviously, they'd be one of the most unique cookies we've had of this... the latest cookie search that we're doing, our impromptu cookie search. But not going to be having the kind of variation that we're seeing from a place like Bell's or Hello Robin, but definitely a unique cookie with the ube flavoring. I'm excited for this.
I feel like 2025 search for Seattle's best ube, which is primarily Hood Famous, but also what I assume is sourced from them or affiliated with them somewhat, the ube shake at Lil Woody's exclusively at the Ballard location.
I thought that was in partnership.
I think it is. I just don't want to necessarily say that without verifying it.
Okay. That would be so un-Peltoncast-like of you.
Oh, yeah.
Saying something without verifying it.
Look, that I say for the group chat. Okay, so the reason you had to wait so long to eat Cookies Country Chicken last Friday is because on your way back from Central Washington, you stopped in Leavenworth at one of your favorite locations, Munchin House.
Oh, God, I love the Munchin House.
It's Leavenworth food, Doc, not Seattle food, Doc.
So was driving to Central Washington, relatively, basically Chelan, and stopped on my way there and back in Leavenworth at the Munchin House. Munchin House has nobody sitting in their location. It is all app ordering or all online ordering. I could not ask for a better situation. And one upgrade, I think the last time I was there was with you 5 years ago. So it's been a while since I've been in the Munchin House.
You've threatened to drive to Leavenworth just to go to Munchin House.
Absolutely, I have threatened.
And I've pointed out that you could, in the same amount of time, drive to Portland and have like your pick of world-class restaurants.
What I couldn't have in Portland is a soft pretzel with Beecher's cheese to dip it in. I'm telling you, this is an all-time great food because it's so different. Like, you can taste the Beecher's cheese. It's like there's no mac in there, but it's like you're dipping a pretzel into Beecher's mac and cheese. There could not be a better combination of flavors, and it's so unique. Like, the Beecher's cheese with the soft pretzel is unlike anything I've ever had before. I'm telling you, it is worth driving 2 hours to the questionably social distant Leavenworth, Washington. And having this pretzel. Look, the Munchin House is doing it totally right. And I also recommend, I just think everything they do is great. I recommend the bratwurst that they have, the condiments, the sauerkraut. You would never eat that, of course. But you can just get so many different types of mustard, so many different types of sides on your bratwurst. It's great. But really, the champion here is the cup of Beecher's cheese to dip your pretzel in. I don't know, is this a thing that Beecher's has? Or would you have to melt their cheese yourself?
I don't know. I can't speak to that. I can't say I've considered it at all. You also there can get their affiliated brewery, Icicle Brewery, their beer, right?
Absolutely, you can.
Yeah. So that's a nice combination there.
I have a photo. I haven't posted this to Instagram yet, actually. But I have a photo of the pretzel with the Beecher's cheese. I'll go ahead and throw that up on Instagram soon.
Auntie Karima is waiting for that, so you better get that up there for her. She's been waiting since last Monday or whatever you originally posted about Munchin House and didn't post the pretzel. Okay, should we move on to our search for Seattle's best teriyaki?
Absolutely, we should.
We should, because I'm very excited to talk about this location, which I went to back in February.
Wow.
Okay. I went there the week before we went to Yoshino. Because I didn't know how it was going to work out. Or I think I was doing it, I don't know if that was before All-Star, or maybe it was before my trip to Boston, but it was something to get that in the can so that you could go there later and we could talk about it. And then lo and behold, the entire city of Seattle shut down, and we did not go to any of these locations for several months here. But I was very eager to get back there and try it again a second time, because the way that you feel about Yoshino is the way I feel about Teriyaki Madness.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's getting serious.
It's getting serious.
But what was your take on Teriyaki Madness?
I thought it was great. I don't... Oh, man, it's tough. Yoshino is such a specific flavor with the drizzled teriyaki sauce on top of it. You know, it's almost like maple syrup, that teriyaki sauce. And I don't know if Teriyaki Madness had... I got the spicy chicken. I don't know if Teriyaki Madness had such a special flavor, but I think the whole thing was very well done.
That's interesting, because I think their sauce is top-notch. Now, oddly, I did not go with the spicy chicken at Teriyaki Madness. I went with the regular. And to me, their sauce is right there with Ichiro is the best teriyaki sauce that I've had. It's like very thick, very sweet and flavorful. It's everything I want in teriyaki sauce.
Interesting. Maybe that's a difference between the spicy and the regular.
It is possible, yes.
Okay, so what are your ratings for the different categories of Teriyaki Madness?
I'm going with the ratings from February. Apparently, I rated the chicken only a 7. I maybe need to bump that up to like a 7.5. The sauce, I scored an 8.5, which again tied for the best we've had. A 7 for extras, pretty average there, and an 8 for value.
I feel like these grades are not that effusive.
I mean, I think it's just the consistency across the board, and sauce gets the heaviest weight for me by far.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a great teriyaki experience. This was one that was possibly worth the trip. It was possibly a travel teriyaki.
Ooh, especially if you can go to Hello Robin at the same time. Are you comfortable saying that Teriyaki Madness deserves a spot in whatever we decide to do as a bracket for this?
I'm not there yet. I guess it depends on how many locations are going to be in the bracket. If we're doing top three, I can't definitively say that yet. We still have Bill Barnwell's teriyaki in Everett or wherever.
Yes.
We still have the original Toshis. You know, we've got some special teriyakis to go to still.
That's true.
And the teriyaki that I went to, Choice Deli, that you have not had yet. It's a real competitor.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to try it. I'm excited to try all of these. I'm not sure what we're going to hit up next week. The listener, Jesse.
Our coordination. Basketball started, and we just cannot coordinate anything anymore.
That's true. It's all thrown off. No. The listener, Jesse, suggested Rainier Teriyaki, which was his local spot. If that's someplace I can get to, I think that may be our next one.
I could probably bring it to you.
Okay. There we go. Okay, so let's move along to sports, starting, you alluded to this earlier, with our NBA update, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza.
Because Pagliacci Pizza is peaking at the right time, and so are the Blazers.
There you go. A big win tonight over the Houston Rockets in the third of their seeding games, bringing them to 2-1 in the restart of the NBA season. And currently in sole possession of ninth place in the Western Conference, which would be good enough to assure them a spot in the play-in matchup if the season ended today, which of course it does not. They started out with an overtime victory over the Memphis Grizzlies, who are 0-3 so far and lost their leading scorer, at least in the restart, Jaren Jackson Jr., to a meniscus tear. The Blazers have now moved within a game and a half in the standings of the Grizzlies, and there's actually a realistic chance that they could go into the play-in matchup as the number 8 seed. Quickly ran some simulations of this before we went recorded, and the Blazers
I did the same.
Now you gotta run some simulations. 20% of simulations ended up as the number 8 seed going into the play-in matchup, and about 30% of matchups ended up the 9 seed. So 50-50 that they're in this play-in matchup.
Who is the next best percentage-wise to go into the play-in matchup?
I mean, Memphis is still ahead of them.
After Memphis.
And then New Orleans, it's very close between Portland and New Orleans. New Orleans is 45%.
And New Orleans has not looked great since the recent start, yes?
Well, they lost their first two games. I mean, people overreacted to the fact that they lost a blowout to the Clippers in the second game when the Clippers made a million threes in the first half. But the good news is that, you know, Twitter didn't overreact to this at all and say that they were finished, et cetera, et cetera. Then they beat the Grizzlies head-to-head on Monday in an extremely crucial game. And now their schedule is super easy the rest of the way. They don't play a single team with an above 500 record the rest of their game.
How is that even possible?
Well, they had the easiest schedule in the league going into the restart.
I know, but with the teams that are there, like, really?
The Blazers also had a reasonably easy remaining schedule, but a lot of the teams they were scheduled to play did not make it to Orlando.
Interesting.
I mean, look, if the Blazers play like they did against the Rockets, they can beat anyone.
Including the Lakers. Let's go!
I mean, I think what's been really impressive to me about these three games is Damian Lillard taking on the defensive challenge in addition to everything he's doing offensively. On Sunday against Boston, the game that they lost by four after a furious second half comeback, it was Dame defending Jason Tatum, a 6'8" small forward, most of the second half, and containing him, kind of shutting him down after Tatum went off in the first half. And then tonight, it was him defending James Harden and Russell Westbrook throughout this game.
I'll tell you, Dame is finally evolving into a player similar to his fellow Oaklander, Gary Payton. This is the new glove right here. Dame Lillard, he plays offense. He will defend your 6'8" small forward. Thank you. And he will shut them down.
Let's remain calm here. Gary Payton was the last guard to win Defensive Player of the Year.
Was he really?
I'm pretty sure he was. Wow. I mean, there's been a couple like small forwards, like Kawhi and Metta World Peace have won it, but no guards have won it since him.
Huh.
Yeah. But nonetheless, awesome to see this evolution for from Damian Lillard. Nurk is back. Yusuf Nurkic. I would say it's like he never left, except he got better. Like he developed the rip-through move.
Is he better?
I think he's better.
Man, Nurk can do it all. It's just so exciting to see him out there. It's funny in 2020 that the most exciting player on the court for the Blazers is center. But his passing, his touch, his rebounding, Nurk is everywhere. The way that him and Dame play together is like, you don't realize how much you miss that until you see it again. And that's the thing. That was my first response after watching the game against the Celtics was like, they did this whole playoff run last year without Nurk.
Yep.
Like, this is, you know, they're not at full strength, but this is a scary Blazers team. If I were, this is such commenter speak. If I were any team, I would.
Oh, yeah, you gotta do it in the commenter voice.
You do not want to see Damian Lillard, Yusuf Nurkic, and the Portland Trail Blazers in round one. I'm telling you right now, if I am LeBron James and the Lakers, I want to see any team besides Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum in the backcourt. This is a team that nobody in the Western Conference wants to play in the first round of the playoffs.
Okay, don't overdo it. You need to save that for M's hot text. You also don't want to see Gary Trent, who has been on fire from three-point range in the bubble. 16 points on 4 of 9 three-point shooting tonight. Played 35 minutes off the bench, finishing this one for the Blazers. It was not a strong night for Melo, who was 5 of 14 from the field, but made the big shot down the stretch to help the Blazers seal this victory.
That's funny, because I feel like the internet was still taking a victory lap for Melo after this one.
Look, the internet will take a victory lap on Melo for Melo on anything.
And this is we're talking about if we get Blazers Lakers in round one. This is the Melo revenge series. They never wanted to sign Carmelo Anthony. They always wanted to talk about how much they loved Carmelo Anthony, but for some reason an offer never came. They signed Boogie Cousins. They signed J.R. Smith. They signed everybody else, but offer never came.
J.R. Smith was long after Carmelo was in Portland.
Look. Proving a point here.
You need to go back to commentator voice for that one.
You want Alex Caruso, but you don't want Carmelo Anthony.
Wow. I think everyone wants Alex Caruso ahead of Melo at this point. The internet loves Alex Caruso more than it loves Melo.
I'm just saying, there's a lot of aged players on that Lakers roster.
You should have gone with Jared Anthony. Dudley.
I would have had to have known that Jared Dudley was on the Lakers first. But they never wanted Carmelo Anthony, and now he's in Portland. And all of a sudden, he's making clutch threes to seal the deal against the Rockets. Like, it is fun watching this Blazers team.
Yeah, 100%. So I hope they make it into the play-in, which we'll have a better idea about by the time we talk next week, nearing the end of these seeding games. Anything else we should talk about from the NBA restart?
I don't know.
Crawford was back for like 8 minutes this morning.
Oh,
it was super
no.
fun. He had three assists, made a three-pointer, and then suffered a hamstring injury and left the game. It was a rough go. Rough go.
Oh, man.
Third Felton brother, Jamal Crawford. Get well soon, good sir. Let's turn our attention to the Seattle Kraken, who were making news off the ice this week. First off, a report from Abraham Madcore of Sports Business Journal indicating that Amazon's naming rights deal for our beloved Climate Pledge Arena will be worth, quote, nearly $400 million over 20 years. So,
not paying taxes really pays.
Also, the Kraken hired Dave Biseggio as director of pro scouting last week, in addition to adding three pro scouts to their existing staff of five. Biseggio spent the past 12 seasons with the Anaheim Ducks, most recently as assistant to the GM.
Oh, man.
It's very odd. They promoted him to assistant to the GM, but it's distinct assistant to the regional manager vibes, so I'm all
That's
about it.
That's the actual title?
Yeah. That's I double check this. With that noted, it's time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at ya.
Well, now that the Mariners have taken a familiar spot and last in the AL West, I have to say it. This season is illegitimate. And I'll tell you why. Voting. You know, it's election day here in Washington State, and I'm reminded of one of the most important pastimes of the baseball season, voting on an all-star ballot. It has everything. The feeling that you personally made a difference, grabbing a stack of the ballots, the hanging chads, voting for Mike Blowers nine times at once. No baseball season can be official without this truly sacred act. And that's why I'm asking you, like me, to not verify the results of this baseball season until voting is brought back again.
Wow, it's a contested season. The Mariners, it was fun. That 500 thing was fun while it lasted, wasn't it? It was quite quick. As it turns out,
I personally was cheering for the season to be canceled again.
The Mariners.
It wasn't that fun.
we can't rule it out. First off, it seems very plausible. The Mariners currently riding a 3-game losing streak and trailing 5-2 the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. What is their name again?
A 4-game losing streak as you're listening to this.
Yes, it all like went in the bottom of the eighth inning here. Entering this game, their FanGraphs playoffs odds. We haven't talked about the new MLB playoff format, where the top two teams in each division make it, in addition to two additional wild cards, for a total of 8 teams. And like, if the Mariners can't make the playoffs with half the league making the playoffs, more than half the league, I don't know if they're ever going to make the playoffs.
There we go.
But the FanGraphs projections currently giving them, during this game, a 6% chance to make the playoffs, 0.3% to win division, 2% for second in the AL West, and 4% for one of those two additional wild cards. But Kyle Lewis is fun, isn't he?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So there you go. On the OL rain front, news on Tuesday that forward Jody Taylor is transferring to Olympic Lyonnais, the new parent club of the Reign. the transfers through the end of the calendar year, allowing De Taylor to participate in the scheduled UEFA Women's Champions League and the Coupe de France. The Reign will retain Taylor's NWSL rights, and it remains to be seen if she'll be back on the roster for the start of a potential 2021 season. Some talk of NWSL teams, you know, playing some friendlies, maybe some four-team tournaments, things like that, the rest of the season, but there's not going to be an actual full NWSL season like is planned in the MLS. Good news, by the way. The M's scored a run. It's down to 5-3. It's up to 5-3 now.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. By the way, the worst thing about this MLS is back tournament is the fact that Portland made the semifinals after not facing the Sounders because of their draw with LAFC, who then went out against Orlando in penalties on last week.
It's rough times. Not legitimate either.
You're also not rich. Well, in happier news, let's talk about the Storm, who improved to 4-1 on the young WNBA season with their win on Tuesday night versus the Connecticut Sun, 87-74, pulling away in the second half after trailing by two at the break in this one. Sue Bird missed her second consecutive game after being diagnosed with a bone bruise in her left knee, which she suffered last Tuesday. Tried to play through that injury during their lone loss against the Washington Mystics, the defending WNBA champions, by an 89-71 final on Thursday, but said she told the AP's Doug Feinberg that, quote, something was wrong with her knee in that game, and underwent an MRI that revealed the diagnosis. Sounds like she may be out a couple more games, although she declared herself officially day-to-day, but the Storm winning both the games she sat out so far, 81-75 on Saturday versus the LA Sparks, a game that was a little shaky down the stretch in Jordan Canada's first start of the season when she scored 16 points but committed 6 turnovers in that one, playing 33 minutes. But a better offensive game in this one against Connecticut on Tuesday night, and the Storm now, for the moment, with the league's best record before the other teams who entered the day 3 and are tied with the Chicago Sky at 4-1, I guess, tied for the league's best record.
Can I just send a message to anybody who thinks that I may be cheering against Sue Bird here?
Yeah, I saw that.
And that is definitively not the case. I'm just here enjoying the Storm championship season like all the rest of us. I am definitely not cheering against Sue Bird for my stupid take from 2 years ago. I'm not you, who, if your fucking projections say something, you will cheer against any person. You care more about your projections. Look, I'm willing to admit defeat and move on. In fact, I one of my favorite pastimes is admitting that I'm wrong.
We need to normalize admitting that you're wrong. And you're doing your best to do it.
Uh-huh.
Look, I think I took the L on Jacob Eason before rescinding that take.
You both took an L and a W, and that's what I do in every situation.
I took an L after the Utah game, and then later rescinded it.
If you argue both sides of a point, then you could both take an L and a W no matter what. It's what I'm aiming for with Jamal Adams here.
Look, it was way too much to give up, but Jamal Adams is such an amazing player, he's going to transform the Seahawks defense.
Oh, man.
So the Storm with a big week ahead. A lot of national TV appearances. Tuesday's game was on ESPN2. They'll be back on ESPN2 Thursday afternoon at 3 p.m. taking on the Atlanta Dream. And then Saturday at 12 noon on ABC on the network, taking on the Phoenix Mercury, who have won 3 in a row after an 0-2 start to stabilize a little bit. So that should be a pretty good matchup for the Storm.
Diana Taurasi's playing these games, right?
She is, yeah.
For some reason, she wasn't in the 2K WNBA rosters when we were playing with them earlier.
Back to last season?
Possibly. Did she miss a couple games at the beginning of the restart, or has she been playing every game?
I think she's played every game as far as I've known.
Huh.
Noticed.
All right.
Yeah. Also, the Storm making news along with the WNBA teams off the court on Tuesday night is all the teams arrived to the games wearing Vote Warnock t-shirts, referencing Reverend Warnock, who is running against Atlanta Dream minority owner Kelly Loeffler, who has been outspoken in her criticism of the WNBA's support of Black Lives Matter and you know, just general social justice focus for this season, with Breonna Taylor's name on their jerseys. And Sue Bird, it turns out, was behind this effort.
Wow.
Came up with the idea to support her opponent. There is an indication of their displeasure with Loeffler, who has refused to sell her share in the Atlanta Dream while continuing to repeatedly criticize WNBA players, because this is the world we live in 2020.
Also, just like something that maybe slightly less so in the WNBA, but that this is the entire WNBA who's doing this, right?
I mean, obviously not all the teams play tonight, but yeah.
I just feel like that is unheard of in professional sports as of even a year ago.
Yes. Oh, I mean, there was, you know, like strong support in the past, you know, when WNBA players wore I Can't Breathe t-shirts back in, I think that was 2016. But yeah, for it to be apparently everyone in the league, yeah, very different.
And for voting against a minority owner in the league, like, that is, it's not protecting the sigil in a way that most sports leagues demand to happen.
Yeah. So, check out, I contributed, transcribed a few of the quotes from the Storm players after the game about that for our ESPN news story about the t-shirts.
You're really taking a W here for transcribing some quotes.
Look, no one else did it, okay? I stepped up.
Oh, Lord. Is your name on that anywhere?
Yeah, I contributed to this report.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, they wouldn't have known who transcribed those quotes otherwise.
There you go. Okay, let's talk about Pac-12 football, because there's a lot going on here.
Boy.
So, last Friday, the league announced that the school presidents have approved a new Pac-12 schedule. The championship game has been moved back to December 19th, following the lead of the SEC. The season will start September 26th with an optional move back a week, with those games to instead be played the week of the Saturday of December 12th before the championship game. The Apple Cup will remain...
Just in case coronavirus is eradicated between September 26th and October 3rd.
Well...
We're just going to... Look, it might happen. Nobody could predict the future.
I think it's more about the improvement in terms of conditions to start fall camp during that period. And even if the rates of transmission don't necessarily go down, if there's what more widespread availability of testing, it will probably help make it more feasible
to
practice.
It's a week difference.
You know, every day counts. The Apple Cup is still scheduled for the traditional Thanksgiving weekend, with the Huskies and Cougars both scheduled to play the following weekend, UW finishing up against USC the following Saturday.
Has there been any mention of fans in these games, or is that just...
You know, I think the official position is just it's based on the rules in the local jurisdiction. Pretty clearly, we are not on a path. I mean, that's a phase four activity, I think, in Washington State. And we are, even though thankfully the numbers do appear to be slightly declining from their peak, you know, their second peak in late July, it seems unlikely that they're going to decrease enough that we're going to get to phase four anytime soon.
Their second peak in late July, and here we are in early August.
All the way in early August.
I mean, I think for the state of California, right, with those schools, there's already no chance of that of fans being in those stadiums.
It's extremely unrealistic. Yeah, I mean,
Lord.
And as much as people do say, like, wear a mask if you want to, like, go to a college football game, like, that's not happening just by wearing a mask. That's probably not happening until we have widespread vaccination, realistically.
Or until everything's fixed between September 26th and October 3rd.
Okay.
The Pac-12's official position is, we're just going to see what happens on September 27th.
But of course, an open question is to how many players will be participating in this season. A group of Pac-12 players calling itself College Football Player Opt-Out Movement and using the slogan "We Are United" vowed not to participate in practices unless their demands of Pac-12 leadership are met. Those demands fall into four categories: health and safety protections, protect all sports, end racial injustice, economic freedom, and equity. Key asks of the group include allowing players the option to play without losing eligibility or their spot on the team roster, which is not specifically protected by the Pac-12, which has said that players can opt out of the season without any threat to their scholarship. Prohibiting and voiding agreements waiving COVID-19 liability, which is something the Pac-12 noted that none of their schools have used. Anyway, a third party selected by players to enforce player-approved health and safety standards, administrators and coaches to, quote, voluntarily and drastically reduce pay, and lavish facility expenditures, a task force and summit related to racial injustice, 2% of conference revenue directed by players to support financial aid for low-income black students, community initiatives, and development programs, medical insurance for sports-related medical conditions, including COVID-19, to cover 6 years after eligibility is exhausted. It appears, based on the Pac-12's response, that they currently offer 4 years of insurance, which is compared to 2 years in most other conferences. Name, image, and likeness rights, which is something that's currently in the process of being determined. And then 50% of each sport's total conference revenue distributed evenly among athletes in their respective sports. 6 year scholarships, allowing players the ability to pursue graduate degrees, ability to transfer one time without punishment, and ability to return and complete eligibility if undrafted in pro draft.
Seems good to me.
UW outside linebacker Joe Tryon and wide receiver Ty Jones were listed as, quote, media contracts for the group, although they've yet to do any interviews that I've seen. Several other Huskies, including incoming freshman Savelle Smalls and returning starters Josiah Bronson and Trent McDuffie, posted the We Are United graphic on Twitter. Elijah Molden, one of the team's stars, posted a note indicating his support for the group but not agreement with all the demands, some of which he wrote, quote, seem unrealistic and far-fetched given the context of our unique situation. The Seattle Times reported the Huskies would have the team meeting on Monday to address the concerns, although we haven't seen anything coming out of that yet. In other We Are United-related news, the mother of Wazoo redshirt sophomore wide receiver Cassidy Woods posted on Twitter that his son had been cut from the team because of his involvement with the group. Several sources then posted audio and a transcript of his conversation Saturday with new WSU coach Nick Rolovich after informing Rolovich that he was opting out of the season due to medical concerns related to sickle cell anemia. Wood was asked, quote, now are you going to be joining that Pac-12 football unity group? Is that what it is? After being told yes, Rolovich replies, so that's going to be an issue if you align with them as far as future stuff, right? Because the COVID stuff is one thing, but joining this group is going to put you on a, obviously you get to keep your scholarship this year, but it's going to be different. If you say I'm opting out because of COVID and health and safety, I'm good, but this group is going to change, I guess, how things go in the future for everybody, at least at our school. So just think about that. If it's about getting paid and ... fight racial injustice and that stuff, then there's two sides there. Here, I'm good with sickle cell and the COVID, but this group is going to be at a different level as far as how we're going to kind of move forward in the future, I think. Does that make sense? Which, by the way, it doesn't.
It makes no sense.
Rambling and nonsensical, but that's a separate issue. Two other players told USA Today that their status with the team is uncertain after they informed Rolovich they are part of the We Are United group. He did issue an apology for his word choice through the school this week.
I didn't see that. What word choice was he apologizing for?
Unclear.
Okay.
So, the Sports Illustrated obtained a four-page letter sent by Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott to this group on Monday that expressed a willingness to meet remotely later this week. The AP reported on Tuesday that members of the group met with the staff of California Governor Gavin Newsom in hope of legislative support. You may remember that it was California that initially passed the name, image, likeness legislation that has sort of forced the hand of the NCAA in actually dealing with this issue.
Now, how widespread do we think that this is throughout the Pac-12? And how likely do we think players are, obviously we don't know this yet, but how likely do we think players are to actually sit out this season because of this?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's tough to say how much this is just a negotiating position as opposed to, you know, if, I mean, the comment is if all our demands are met. I don't think that, like realistically, some of these things are not possible to happen overnight, particularly the 50% of revenue distributed to players by sport would be in a near 180 change in how athletic departments conduct their business. So that's pretty obviously not going to be something that the Pac-12 or schools are going to do. So, you know, which of these kind of are must-haves and which of these are negotiating positions remains to be seen. They also talked about representing hundreds of players at the conference, but we haven't necessarily seen that many people go public with their support of this group or their involvement.
It's really a tough balance because it's like if you get majority of players in the Pac-12, then we're talking about a situation where the Pac-12 really has to do something here. I mean, I guess at the very least, starting this conversation is important. And the structure, really with many sports in general, but college football and major college sports in particular, is an unfair structure in so many different ways to the athletes. The athletes are giving up so much more than anybody else involved in the process is giving up for this, that it feels like it's something that there's nobody who's as incentivized to make a change here as the athletes are. And to me, that's where it needs to start. And so hopefully this will be able to be a catalyst to, I mean, I think you're probably right that every single one of these demands is not going to be met by the beginning of the season, but if there can at the very least be some sort of oversight from keeping players safe, right?
Yeah.
At the most basic elements where it's just like, this is shit that you should be doing no matter what. Right. Like, we understand that you are a college sports athletic department and your goal above all else is just to wish all the problems away. But like, that is the most basic thing that you can be doing to protect the athletes who are playing for you. And it doesn't feel like that's something that college athletic departments have done almost anywhere throughout the country. Right. When you look at what's the plan here, they're just like, well, we're going to push it back a few weeks and see. We're not. It's like not playing non-conference games. Who cares? Right? Like, that doesn't actually make anybody safer.
Well, it potentially does in terms of standardizing safety protocols. I think that's the important thing about playing conference games only.
Well, maybe let's start to see some of those safety protocols, because it's not working in a sport like baseball that's trying to do a similar thing. And the stakes are so much greater for these college athletes, because at least baseball players are getting paid. And it feels like MLB players are making a choice to be there more than the college players are. And granted, everybody's making a choice to be there, but like, they're doing this in a lot of ways as a means to an end. And they don't want to be the one player who's sitting out. If you're Savelle Smalls and you're like, am I not going to go to the NFL because I'm standing up against this unjust system? You know, like,
for my safety.
For his safety and for making a legitimate change throughout college sports and the world at large. Like, it's just the entire system of college sports and college football in particular is set up to take advantage of the athletes. And this is one of the first times that we're seeing the players stand up for themselves while they're there on campus. And at least making some bit of waves, you know?
I mean, I think a key theme of, you know, this college sports offseason in particular has been players realizing how much power they wield and trying to take advantage of that. And, yeah, it's time. It's long overdue.
Yes. But especially a small group of players wields some power. All players wields out all the power.
Agreed. I mean, but especially, you know, in the context of what we've seen with these outbreaks on numerous teams, and then there was a horrifying report by the Coloradan newspaper today about Colorado State University's program and the possibility that the coaching staff was telling players not to report symptoms because they did not want players to be quarantined and have to give up their practice time.
Oh, my God. They're like, maybe everybody should go to Rona parties. Just get it over with. I mean, I saw there was a Facebook post from, I believe it was the University of Indiana offensive lineman, or maybe the mother of University of Indiana offensive lineman, was just like, Jesus Christ. And there was, oh God, another player, I want to say that he was a big college defensive lineman who was talking about how much weight he'd lost after having coronavirus, and it was just like, this is not somebody who's physically able to go play a college football game. You know, like this bullshit idea on the internet that it's like, well, is nobody going to talk about how all the players who have their, all the teams who have their players get it earlier are going to be in a great position come January? It's just like, it's fucking stupid.
And you could just try having no one get it at all. It is possible.
It really is like, what are we doing here? You know, like, and this is an important moment. My hope is that this moment doesn't go away as things get better or whatever. Like, this needs to continue in college sports for college sports to continue.
It's the backdrop of not just COVID-19, but also, you know, the protests, the Black Lives Matter movement in general. Like, I think that's an element of this as well. And that's clearly not going anywhere anytime soon.
Well, I don't want this to be the type of thing that just goes away. And really, like, when I think about it, it's probably easier in basketball than it is in football. But I'm like, there needs to be – if these colleges are not going to deal with it, there needs to be a legit competitor. Like, if we're going to live in a capitalist society, let's at least have some fucking competition here. Because what these schools have is a monopoly on – athletes, in particular football players, from their 19 to 21 year old seasons, right? And there's no real other legitimate place to go. There's no Europe. There's no ING Academy. There's no going straight to the NBA DL. Like, this is it for college football players or college aged football players, right? There's nowhere else to go. So it is a monopoly, and I think just the financials of setting up a rival college football type structure, you know, hopefully the Rock can do it. It's like, but there's,
I hadn't thought about that. Wow. The Rock playing the NFL XFL is really, wow. Life imitating art.
You hadn't thought about that?
No,
that's what the XFL should do. The XFL should be like, we're not competing with the NFL. We're competing with college football. Like, I feel like you start to pick off players pretty quickly. And that's what needs to happen here, because these schools, we're talking the Pac-12, which is probably some of the most progressive schools that play college football in the country. Like, these schools are not going to make these choices on their own. There's not going to be a fucking time period where all of a sudden every school is like, hell, we should just start paying the players that we haven't been paying, or we should make it a more hospitable experience for the players. Like, there needs to be something that's happening either from the players or from outside competition that pushes these schools to be better, because right now it's wrong.
Yeah. The latest UW Athletics update on COVID-19 testing on campus, they reported 3 active cases last week. One of them previously reported, one who tested positive after quarantining because of contact with an individual who tested positive, and one new positive after reporting symptoms. That brings to a total of 8 cases that have occurred among the 221 players, much like this episode, who returned to campus. So, you know, compared to other colleges, UW doing quite well, but you look at the quarantining, even if you have only a couple of cases, if that forces, you know, large swaths of your team to quarantine, it makes it unclear how exactly it's possible to compete.
Don't ask the St. Louis Cardinals.
But now let's talk about the NFL. Because the Denver Broncos are sanitizing that virus away as people walk through the temperature check, I assume that was.
Oh, man. Oh, it was great.
Pete Carroll held his first media availability of...
John Elway likes his quarterbacks tall and his players sanitized.
It reminds me of a David Letterman top 10 list book joke about the sanitized for your protection. I think that was in place of the sash at a beauty pageant. Of quote-unquote training camp on Monday, I use that loosely at this point, said that the team is monitoring the status of wide receiver Antonio Brown, which he called, quote, a very complex situation. Brown was suspended by the NFL last week for the first 8 games of 2020 due to repeated violations of the player conduct policy, regardless of whether he's on a team's roster. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler reported Brown could be suspended for additional games depending on the results of an ongoing NFL investigation into the allegation from Brown's former trainer that he sexually assaulted her. Carroll also said the team is, quote, very open to the thought of bringing back Josh Gordon, but, quote, it's not in our hands as the NFL decides his appeal for reinstatement from his indefinite suspension last season while playing for the Seahawks.
It does feel like for Antonio Brown in particular, there's some circling happening.
I don't know quite how to read it.
I don't know if this is just
pursue every opportunity.
I think there is legit circling happening between the two parties. That 8-game suspension, is it just the first 8 games he can't play, possibly more, whether he's on a roster or not? Or does he need to sign to a roster to then be suspended for those 8 games?
My understanding, from what I've read, is that it's the first 8 games no matter what.
Okay.
So
the Seahawks could hypothetically sign him in, like, week 6.
Plausibly.
This is just like fantasy football when you have a player where you're like, I'm going to pick up that player down the road.
I pick up Sabrina Ionescu in our WNBA fantasy league just in case she comes back from that ankle sprain, which really ill-timed by the end of the season. But obviously this is a somewhat different situation because of the fact that, you know, it's a suspension for repeated violations of the personal conduct policy. Running back Rashad Penny was placed on the PUP list to begin training camp. Carroll said Monday that he won't arrive until later this week and will begin his testing process and quarantine process then. Rookies Daryl Taylor, Colby Parkinson, and undrafted rookie Marcus Webb were placed on the non-football injury list. Taylor underwent surgery in January to address a stress fracture in his lower leg and insert a titanium rod, while Parkinson, you'll recall, had surgery in June after suffering a Jones fracture. The Seahawks plan a scrimmages at CenturyLink Field on August 22nd and August 26th to replicate the game environment without the benefit of preseason this year. And the Seahawks have not as yet placed a player on the COVID-19 list that the NFL has this season. So that's certainly encouraging news.
There we go.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how much they were expecting from Daryl Taylor this year, and it is a very deep group of defensive linemen, irrelevant if they make any additional changes. But it'll be interesting to see if he is able to have an impact on the season.
Yeah, certainly more difficult if he, you know, I mean, I guess they're not on the field at this point anyway, so I'm not sure what he's missing. If, you know, I don't know if the NFI list affects your ability to participate in the virtual, you know, kind of position groups meetings that they're having right now. But certainly doesn't help. All right, lastly, we now have the final NFL 100 list. Seahawks who made the top 40 include newly acquired Jamal Adams at number 27, Bobby Wagner at number 13, and at number 2, just as he's been in just about everything, Russell Wilson, although in this case ahead of Patrick Mahomes, who was inexplicably voted 4th by his fellow players.
Pretty wild list.
With Lamar Jackson at number 1.
I mean, I don't necessarily question if you're just judging last season, Lamar Jackson being number one.
But that's not how the NFL 100 list works. And if you're judging just last season, the playoffs happened.
It literally, you could not figure out a logic for this. My favorite part, though, is after the Seahawks traded for Jamal Adams, everybody was like, well, second best defender in the league, easy. And you're like, wait, he finished number 27 on this list? Because that's definitely not the second best defender.
Well, he is the second best defender on the Seahawks.
That's another one. I mean, like,
there was one general manager who called him the second best player. And one of the things about the like anonymous quotes is that you're only going to pick the most extreme anonymous quotes. The person who regresses their opinion to the mean the most isn't getting anonymously quoted.
But seeing him so far after Bobby Wagner is just like, oh, okay, cool.
And look, that's not necessarily a bad thing because, again, the Seahawks, they have Bobby Wagner. So it's not the worst thing in the world. But he was also behind Von Miller, TJ Watt, Cam Jordan, Khalil Mack, Nick Bosa, Chandler Jones.
He was the 10th defensive player.
Okay. Stephon Gilmore. And, of course, Aaron Donald came in number three.
It also is wild seeing him. I think this was you who said was talking about Richard Sherman, one spot ahead of Richard Sherman.
Well, there you go. Very different takes between front offices and fellow players about Richard Sherman.
I wonder why they could have these takes.
I mean, I have some issues with the way that the NFL executives and coaches go about their decision making, but I still think they're probably updating their opinions a little more frequently than players are.
No, I mean, this list means nothing, obviously. Like, the amount of running backs who are in the top 40 is truly incredible. There's some, you're just like, wait, Aaron Jones? I mean, even seeing Chris Carson in this, like, list of the top 100 players in the NFL, it's like, okay. Or two running backs in the top 10. But, you know, I just think there could be some regressing to the mean that needs to happen with the expectations for Jamal Adams.
Oh, for sure. I mean, look, people, if you would have asked them how good Jamal Adams is before the Seahawks have traded for him and immediately after they traded for him, those are going to be two slightly different answers.
All of a sudden, the extreme quote of calling him the second best defender in the league seems about average.
Right.
Whereas beforehand, he was the 10th best defender in the league. But it's okay. Pete Carroll says he has some Troy Polamalu in him.
It's interesting that comp hadn't come up. It does make sense. Okay. Well, updating an earlier story. The final score. Angels 5, Mariners 3. They dropped to 4-8 on the young season.
No Tristan that one earlier.
Wow. That does not count. You do not get credit for that one.
You're taking credit for transcribing quotes.
That was at least some work. You were looking at a game that were trailing by 3 runs at the bottom of the 8th.
Oh my god.
I at least had to go back and listen to it a few different times because, you know, you don't get all of the transcription. You've probably never, I don't know how much you've transcribed. It's a pain in the ass.
No, I've transcribed a little bit and I hate it more than anything.
Yeah, okay.
I would do anything to not transcribe anything ever again in my entire life.
I mean, why do you think I do podcasts instead of like oral histories as podcasts instead of as written things? Because you don't have to transcribe anything then. It's just there.
Well,
people just
also,
listen to it.
Look, podcasting is just a better medium.
I don't know if I'm ready to go that far.
Than having to read. And we also got some quotes from Pete Carroll. One might call him woke Pete Carroll. From Pete Carroll during this press conference is talking about how he felt like the people who were having anti-masking protests, he described them as weak of mind. And he was very disappointed in them.
Yeah, not surprising given his comments on the podcast he hosted with Steve Kerr. Flying Coach podcast. Pete Carroll gets it on COVID. Now, if only you could trust the science when it comes to running the ball.
Oh, man.
Well, on that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.